art is about design. A museum is about design as well as about the a piece of canvas with pigments on it, or a piece of bronze. You know, what we think of as quote art. Art is about design. Art is about life, how we live our lives, making our lives more interesting and fuller, enhancing our lives. And so that's why this car is here.
This is the newest exhibit, right? I
mean, this is the newest.
The brand one. And what's one of the oldest pieces that you have here?
Well, we have a wonderful example right here. This is exciting and wonderful. This is a painting from done in 1888 and exhibited in 1889 by an American artist who was an expatriate at that time, Gary Melchers. And Melchers was a wonderful artist. And what he, this work was shown in Paris in 1889. Our founding president, Andrew Dixon White, saw it and said it was the best painting in the whole show. He wrote that in his diary. And then 22 years later, by a long story, it ended up being given to the, not to the Johnson Museum, of course, but rather to Cornell as its first important work of art. And that was in 1911. And in to place it in Goldwin-Smith and on campus, the artist came up. The artist worked with the professor of painting, Olaf Brauner, who was the one professor of painting, wonderful painter, and they worked together to place it in Goldwin-Smith. And Olaf Brauner had a daughter who had the wisdom to marry Herbert F. Johnson. So it was always fated to be here. This is a wonderful gallery right here. And here's one of the most exciting objects in the gallery. It's a great, great sculpture from 1909 by Picasso. And it's a spectacular work, very muscular. He's just creating cubism at this point. Look at the wonderful planes and volumes in the face, the cords in the neck, the wonderful hair in the back. I mean, it's just an extraordinary work of art and captures all the strength and power of this woman who was his mistress at the time. When he turned his hand to sculpture, he created extraordinary things. His great moment is around 1905 to 1915, when he created cubism. And this is generally considered the greatest cubist sculpture of them all, with these incredible accumulation, construction, as it were, of flat planes and geometric volumes. It's a powerhouse. It's a wonderful work of art.
How does the Johnson Museum end up with a piece like this?
This is on a promised gift on loan from one of our alumni. And it's interesting, most of the, over 95% of the works of art in the museum are gifts from alumni and friends of the museum. This is the Alberto Giacometti's Walking Man from 1959, exactly 50 years after Picasso. And again, one of the great pieces of 20th century sculpture. This is a gift from the Urus family, Mrs. Percy Urus, one of the great Cornell families, and it's an extraordinary gift. The Uruses have given buildings and professorships and so forth to Cornell, and this is one of their greatest gifts. Giacometti was in Paris during the Second World War, and here you can't help but look at this and think of the concentration camps, of the terrible agonies of war itself, of that war, of any war. Here is this staring figure with the emaciated body, the pockmarked flesh, the heavy feet that are so earthbound. It can barely make its way, and it's a very profoundly moving work. It's a great work of art, and it's, you walk in here and it's that sort of moment of surprise and discovery and revelation, and breathtaking. And to have these two works here juxtaposed with these wonderful paintings around them. I mean, the Giacometti is next to a Jean Dubuffet, which is also done in Paris right after the Second World War, and also has overtones of that terrible experience. The Picasso is right. It is near a great painting by Leger, Fernand Leger, who is also a great Cubist. And so that you can really make these connections of your own on your own, and make many other connections. I mean, people come in for many different reasons, many older people, many Cornell students, and many, many school children.
Good to see you. Hi.
The museum is important, vital to the community, because it is a profoundly educational organization. Many groups come to us, but we also go out to these other places. And it really is fun to see the kids come in. By kids, I can mean, literally 4 and 5 year olds, pre-K. We have a special program in conjunction with the Discovery Trail, which is 8 different museums in the city of Ithaca. But at the same time, I love seeing the teenagers, I love seeing the undergraduates and graduate students, and for that matter, the adults who come in. I mean, the whole point of a museum is not just art. Yes, it is art, of course, but it's art and people. And our job is to bring art and people together.
Storage units are really extraordinary. And we're here, and then separate them. Why don't you go down? And separate them out a little bit.
Oh my goodness.
Yep. And that's exciting.
What is all this stuff?
This is, all of this room is the print room, which in museum parlance means prints, drawings, and photographs. And there are over 20,000 works of art here, all pieces of paper. And it's one of the best collections of prints in the United States, particularly among university museums. And it's a very exciting place because we have so many works. We have 100 Whistlers, over 100 Dürers, Goyas, wonderful Rembrandts, as we'll see, and all kinds of things from the 15th century right on up to the present. And in particular, in 1948, we were given a 3,000 prints by a wonderful collector called William Chapman, who was class of 1895, and he gave these prints, and the 3,000 of them, wonderful works. And it was so important that President Malott decided that we needed to have a museum. So the idea of a museum really began in this place, began with this gift of prints. This is a wonderful, wonderful box here. And Rembrandt is one of the greatest, if not the greatest, printmaker of them all, along with Dürer and Goya and Whistler and a few other people. And this is a spectacular work. Here are the prints.
When are these? I should know this, but when did Rembrandt live? What are these from?
This is 17th century. And here he is. He's born in 1606, dies 63 years later in 1669. And here he is in 1639. He's 33 years old. And he's very successful. He's really gone to the top of his profession in Amsterdam. When Amsterdam was as important a city as London, really, it was a very important city. And in this new young country called what we now call the Netherlands, and here he is. He's a self-portrait, and he's presenting himself as a Renaissance master, not as somebody as great as Leonardo or Raphael or Michelangelo, which is why he uses his first name instead of his last name, Van Rijn, but we always refer to him as Rembrandt, as we refer to Michelangelo Buonarroti as Michelangelo instead of as Buonarroti. And he was thinking in those terms, and a wonderful old dress, and yet with all of this, all of his pretensions and his self-confidence, the hair is frizzy, it's uncombed, almost uncombable. He's not smiling, he's frowning. He can't help but be honest and can't help but show the reality of his personality and of his life. It's quite a wonderful work. Then here is something that is sort of interesting. These prints, these plates, copper plates, survive. Out of over 70 of them still exist. And many, there are many, not just lifetime editions taken from the plate, but also editions taken posthumously in the 18th or 19th century, long after Rembrandt's death. Now, every time the plate goes through the press, it's flattened out a little bit like a pancake. So those lines that have been bitten into, etched into the copper plate, get shallower, they hold less ink, they break down, whole figures disappear. So what you really want is to have a lifetime impression that Rembrandt himself took. And what is lucky is when, wonderful for teaching and for just a simple appreciation, to have a lifetime impression and an impression from the 18th or 19th century. This is a fascinating piece. There's something amazing, just visually unusual, what springs out at you. Not any kind of detail, but just in general, what springs out at you.
The background's pretty muted, and those are
much more
bold and dark.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, how did that happen? Why did it happen? Well, there are many explanations. For example, you could use different needles, a broader needle for the foreground and a thinner needle for the background. Mm-hmm. Or you could do the whole design and then put in the acid and have acid etch into, bite into the plate over the whole design, and then take it out of the acid, cover over this part and the background, and do just and put it back in the acid, and so this gets bitten twice, and so this has deeper cuts and therefore holds more ink. But neither of those explanations is correct. Here is a reproduction of a print by a man called Hercules Segers, S-E-G-E-R-S. Segers was a 17th century Dutch artist who was a very good friend of Rembrandt's. They exchanged prints and paintings and painted on each other's paintings, extraordinary thing. Very close friendship. And then Segers died, and Rembrandt went to his estate sale and bought the plate for this etching by Segers. And then he did something that no other artist had ever done before. As a sort of homage to his late friend,
he
wiped that off. Mm-hmm. He burnished the plate out here, kept the background on the left, burnished this out, which is the Tobias and the angel from the Book of Tobit, burnished it out, and recut it into a New Testament scene, the flight into Egypt. But, you know, he was sloppy, as he often was. He's worked so hard. And if you look, you can see that, for example, he didn't burnish out the wings all the way. You can see that. You see the wings still there?
Mm-hmm.
He didn't burnish out
the left leg
of Tobias all the way. He kept certain things like the lizard there. And so it's a little art history lesson all in itself. Two artists for the price of one, as it were. Collection is about 8,000 or 9,000 works, an extraordinary collection, one of the very best collections of Asian art of any university museum in America. sector. This, for example, is Southeast Asia. In other words, Thailand, Myanmar, Vietnam, Laos, Cambodia, and Indonesia, and Malaysia. Now we're in China. This is the longest continuous culture of any in the world. And it is an extraordinary collection, a very great culture and a great tradition. Everything that has happened here is possible because of the great generosity of all our donors. And this is, and the Kavanaughs have been wonderful to us. And here we have, as you guessed, the Korean Gallery. And this is the Kim Gallery, Juan and Andrew Kim. Andy went here. Juan and Andy Kim sponsored this gallery. And Korean art is very much between, geographically and culturally, between Japan and China. And it's an extraordinary collection of Korean ceramics, Korean paintings, Korean sculpture, particularly Korean ceramics. And that's what you're going to find here. This is a fascinating a platform here. It's a very long platform. What's that for? It's because we've never been able to show pairs of Japanese folding screens, these large screens that can be 5 or 6 feet high.
Fabulous.
And 10 feet long. Mm-hmm. And for the first time, we'll be able to show pairs of them, because they come in pairs in Japan, and we've never been able to do that. And so that's very exciting. This is a very special gallery, too. This part of the gallery is for West Asian art, the art of Iran and Iraq and the Near East. And it's very exciting. There'll be beautiful paintings, and particularly sculpture and ceramics, superb terracottas and other porcelain pieces. And then here is Indian art, the Sandeep Bamer Gallery. The art of India, of course, itself, like that of Chinese art, goes back several millennia. 4 or 5,000 years, and we have a wonderful, wonderful collection, of, particularly of sculpture, but also Indian miniatures and, mm-hmm. and other material. And then geographically next to India, of course, is Tibet and Nepal, the Himalayas. And this is a wonderful collection, selection of works from our large collection of Tibetan art and Himalayan art. And as we leave that area, here we have a wonderful gallery, very special. This is for changing exhibitions of contemporary Asian art, donated by Young Hee Kim Waite and her family. And it's a wonderful, very special space. Well, here's the great view. It's a fabulous view. Gertrude Stein said, I like museums. I like looking out their windows. She would have loved this museum. It is spectacular. Here's this great university intellectual powerhouse in the middle of this extraordinary beauty of nature. And down below, pretty exciting.
Yeah, that we just saw a major renovation of the fifth floor, but this looks like an even more major project. What's going on here?
This is the new wing, which will be ready by the fall in October. The new wing will have all kinds of exciting things in it, new galleries, a Japanese garden, a lecture room, and studio space and so forth. It'd be really exciting. It will change the whole feeling of the arts on this campus. It is our future.
Well, I can't wait to see it in the fall when it opens, and I thank you very much for this special treat to have time with you especially.
Great.
So thanks so much.
Well, the whole point of art is to enhance our lives, to transform our lives, to tell us what we can be at our best, and that's what art is about. And the more people that feel that and are transformed by it, the better society is. The whole point of having original works of art in a museum is to look, and to look closely. Well, this is very exciting. We're looking at the middle floor of the three floors of the new wing. That's a window wall that we're looking at there, or will be, and we'll look out onto nature, onto the trees, and this beautiful landscaping of this building. $22 million, and that has gone to a little bit more than half of that for the wing itself, but we've also had to pay for the renovation of the old building, the new cases, those wonderful cases that we just saw, and also $3 million in endowment for running it, which is I'm very proud of, because we won't be a burden on our successors.
Congratulations. Well done. Well deserved. and thank you for being such a friend to Cornell and the community at large.
At the end of his career and life, the great baseball commissioner, Branch Rickey, during an interview, picked up a baseball and looked at it and said, "Was it worth a life?" Well, this museum and art was worth a life. At age 13, I went to Rome for a year, and up to that point, I was reading comic books, and I just got overwhelmed with art, and it just meant so much to me. Independent of all the other parts of my life, religion or family and so forth. I mean, it didn't replace any of that. It just was such an extraordinary deepening of an enrichment of my life that I knew I had to spend the rest of my life with it. And that is what I want other people to feel.
Come to the Johnson Museum tomorrow, 5 to 7. All right.